couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we've got a real American hero. That would be me, the genius of movies, coming to talk to you about other films. The other hero we're going to be talking about is Captain America. You may have heard of him. He has some comic books written about him. He's almost as fit, almost as buff as I am, but he's got a little bit of ways to go. Captain America the Winter Soldier, we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about Into the Blood, starring somebody also almost as fit as me, Gina Carano. There's Alan Partridge, the movie, which stars nobody fit whatsoever. And Nymphomaniac Volume 2, which, well, there's just a lot of naked people in that one. We're also going to be talking about some news. We're going to have Trailer Park talk about two big anticipated movies this year and the DVD Roundup, the world famous DVD Roundup. Let's not get that forgotten. Anyways, if you want to get a hold of me, you can reach me by email at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You want to find me on Twitter, get on the Twitter and find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Let's start with the news.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. This is what's going on. The first thing I want to talk about isn't really movie news. It is TV news. And I'm only mentioning because it was a big thing that happened this week, and it was the finale of the show, How I Met Your Mother. It was terrible. Now, if you're somebody who DVR'd it or is waiting to watch all the stuff and binge watch on Netflix later this summer, I apologize. I'm going to be talking about what happened in it. You've had a week to watch it. If you didn't watch it off your DVR, it's been all over the internet. The finale ended, and I'm not going to go into all the detail of what happened in the finale and how it doesn't work. Needless to say, it was really, really terrible. And I like to compare it to the Psych finale, which is one of my favorite shows. Psych ended last week, and we'll actually talk about this in the DVD roundup. But I remember I said to my son, who's a big fan of Psych, because he's like, what's the deal with How I Met Your Mother? Why was it so bad? I go, okay, imagine if Psych ended and Gus had been dead the whole time. And my son's jaw dropped to the floor and he goes, that's a terrible ending. And I go, exactly. I'm not even upset that the mother's dead in How I Met Your Mother. I mean, that sort of dismantles the entire show because it's supposed to be about the mother. It's supposed to be about the one for Ted, this one person. But really, the one was Robin. And she was just an afterthought. We had her for like, you know, you got to know her for like 5 or 6 minutes. And then she kicks the bucket. And all she really stood for at that point was someone who Ted sort of shared some geekiness with and who could actually pop out some children because Robin is apparently infertile. My biggest beef with it was how they ruined the character of Barney, because what they did is they filmed the ending with the kids, the two kids that he talks to. They filmed that at pilot stage. Here's the problem with filming the beginning of the ending of a sitcom at pilot stage. You had 8 to 9 years to develop these characters, and they were going somewhere. And Barney was just the equivalent of the wacky neighbor in this. He was just the man whore who went around and had sex with anybody, and it was a big joke. That got old after 4 or 5 seasons, and they actually started to put some depth to his character, and he grew, and there was something more to him than just a joke. And then at the end of the season, they're just like, ooh, we can't have him have to put him back to where he was. And it was, and that's a problem is, shows evolve, and so you need to roll with those punches. And maybe that ending you filmed in 2005 isn't going to work. It would be like ending Happy Days and have it be all about Richie Cunningham with no mention of the Fonz, or ending Family Matters and having nothing to do with Urkel. These are things that evolved in shows that actually made them very popular. And then you could just ruin it because very few shows are exactly what they are in the first season. And that's a good thing because shows grow and evolve. Anyways, the Psych finale is much better. How I Met Your Mother. What really does tick me off about this, though, is the people who ran the show are patting themselves on the back because they got 13 million people to watch it. The problem is, just because 13 million people tuned in doesn't mean you satisfied them. If there were another season, there'd be nobody watching it because it's terrible. And here's why it's a problem. Because they're developing How I Met Your Dad. And there's a lot of bad blood. So none of the fans are going to come back, or very few of the fans are going to come back. And it's going to tank the show. Poor Greta Gerwig's going to get all the blowback from it when it was not her fault. Maybe she could have done a new show, but I think How I Met Your Dad is dead on arrival now because of the shenanigans they pulled. All right, the next piece of news. I want to stop talking about How I Met Your Mother. Not that I was really upset. It's just, it's so disappointing. I wasn't mad because the season 9 was terrible, but it was just disappointing. The next piece of news is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is getting reshoots, which isn't, it made a lot of news this week. And Michael Bay is saying it's totally not going to delay the release. But it's ironic that those reshoots come right after the trailer drops and people are wondering, oh, are they changing things? Are they, you know, are they doing something different? The reality is reshoots happen on almost every movie that ever runs down the pike, as long as it's not like these little tiny little independent films are all done at once because they don't have the budget. But any movie that's got a $20 million budget or more, especially something like this, they're going to get reshoots. They get paid. This is nothing new. They do reshoots all the time. So I'm not fazed by this. We'll talk a little bit more about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as we move into the trailer park. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we already talked about that just a bit about sort of the reshoots, but the trailer dropped, and it's interesting that the reaction that people had to this, and unfortunately this is radio, so you can't actually see this, but you can go on the internet and look at pictures. The people just kind of lost their minds over how the turtles look. Anyways, let's play the trailer real quick.
Our great city is being destroyed. People want heroes, Miss O'Neill. But heroes are not born. They're created. That's what your father and I were trying to do.
Johnny!
No, 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 whoa, whoa, chills. Just a mask. See? Don't freak out.
It opens on August 8th. That's an okay trailer, but the thing is, it just looks so generic. That's my problem with it. It looks like just another generic Michael Bay wannabe movie. It's Battleship. It actually has a real Hungry Hungry Hippos feel to it. Do you remember that fake poster somebody put together when Battleship came out? And they're like, Hungry Hungry Hippos, and they had a giant hippo eating a ship. That's what this feels like. This feels like an afterthought. This feels like them trying to wedge something together. This doesn't feel like they've developed a property that's been around for decades. This looks like they said, hey, look at these toys. Let's make a movie out of them. And we're going to put all the trailer cliches together. On top of it, you got Megan Fox. She doesn't look bad. She's always been easy on the eyes, but I think it's interesting she doesn't speak at all in the trailer. The star, the anchor, main person who is the face on the poster, aside from freaky looking turtles with nostrils, Megan Fox does not say a word. She just sort of makes a couple noises. This is the Keanu effect. Keanu Reeves did well in The Matrix because he barely spoke. Give him a lot of dialogue, it kind of falls apart. Megan Fox, same thing. And also the fact that it's an August date of release, that shows the studio's not... the last Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the CGI one, came out in March. So they're not really pushing this for a big summer or holiday release. It's going kind of just as we're getting ready to go into the sewer of the summer. The other thing is the turtles do look kind of freakish. They have that uncanny valley. They don't quite look like cartoons. They don't quite look like things. They're sort of like somebody did a CGI of what Homer Simpson would look like if he were a real person. Horrifying. I mean, it's the stuff of nightmares. Ultimately, this movie looks like it just takes itself way too seriously. And that's not good because... You know, it's kind of like Transformers, which really takes itself way too seriously and then gets completely stupid. The reality is it's about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It shouldn't take itself too seriously. And the beginning of the trailer shouldn't take itself too seriously. The next one I want to talk about real quick is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes got a TV spot this week. It opens on May 23rd.
You know the scary thing about them? They don't need power. Lights, heat, nothing. That's the advantage. That's what makes them stronger.
This movie looks fantastic. That is all I have to say about it. It just looks like it's going to be an amazing, hardcore, dark, disturbing film about apes taking over our planet. And if you ever saw, I think it was Conquest for the Planet of the Apes, which was the one they made in the 70s. That's a really good movie of the apes taking over, very similar to Rise of the Planet of the Apes. That big ending, it's sort of patterned after that movie. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes looks like it's going to be pretty vicious and pretty intense. I'm looking forward to that. Oh, we got to go. Time is out for this segment. We come back from a break. We're going to talk about Nymphomaniac and In the Blood. Seriously, totally unrelated.
Because we can go!
So sexy it hurts.
Kevin Carr back with Fat Guys of the Movies. We are rolling on through with my rippling muscles and my genius brain. I am a superhero in my own right. But before we talk about superhero movies, let's talk about sex. I should write a song based on that. I could be a pop superstar, don't you think? I mean, really, I could. I could do the Miley Cyrus thing. You know, be really cute and cuddly and then hop on a wrecking ball completely naked and then try and make it in the world. I'm going to put that on my to-do list for 2015. Anyways, let's move on and talk about Nymphomaniac Volume 2. In the second half of Lars von Trier's controversial film, a hypersexual woman deals with the repercussions of her voracious sex life.
When you buy a tiger, right, you also have to feed it. Satisfy it.
I believe I possess some qualifications and that I'm rather unscrupulous.
I know all about your qualifications, and they're excellent.
If you recall, a couple weeks ago, I talked about Nymphomaniac Volume 1, and part of what made this movie so, you know, edgy and part of the greater conversation was Lars von Trier saying, you know what, I'm not even going to try to go for an R rating. I'm going to just make a movie that's raw and has real sex in it, because there are actually people having sex in the first movie. They were done by body doubles, according to the disclaimer at the end. It was, you know, any penetrative sex was taken care of by body doubles, I'm assuming porno actors. So that was not Shia LaBeouf's little LaBeouf doing things. So Nymphomaniac Volume 2 has a decidedly different tone. It's a much darker tone. And even though I still think it's kind of cheap splitting movies up, I've never been a big fan of that because it just is such a cash grab. I actually think this works. A 4-hour art house sex film is going to be a rough haul. So if you split it up into two volumes, and it kind of naturally breaks into two, because the first one was about the discovery, this girl having the discovery of her sexuality. This one is the repercussions of that. What happens? The consequences of doing this. And it shows her as she gets older. Now, I mean, they go it's like 3 years later and she goes from Stacey Martin to Charlotte Gainsborough, who look nothing alike, by the way. And I think they just cast for the acting ability and their willingness to do the on-screen nudity and the fact that Lars von Trier has had Charlotte Gainsborough in like all of his movies recently. It suddenly shows what it's like from the adult perspective, the grown-up perspective, where there's a bit of a pregnancy issue. There's, you know, an unexpected motherhood, having to grow up from that. You can't just go run around and have sex with everybody and ruin people's lives as she did in the first movie. And she's sort of become numb to all of it. And it's her trying to recapture that excitement and really going into daring places to do that. I mean, I can't even tell you some of the things she tries. But what it does is it shows the impact of rejecting intimacy and how it will impact you as you get older and into adulthood and no longer just a kid having fun, you know. And ultimately, it kind of puts together and it juxtaposes her against the character that Stellan Skarsgård plays, who is he's a guy who does not have much any sexual experience, really. So he's sort of hyposexual. She's hypersexual. So it's an interesting pairing. And you get the sense that part of the story is not true. And there's a little bit more depth of kind of wondering how much is true, how much is made up, how much is symbols of other things. And I think it works. And I think that the rejection and the pain and the problems that she goes through in this second half aren't representative necessarily of sex, but just of the challenges of getting older. You're no longer young and pretty. You no longer have things at your command. So sometimes people go overboard on trying to get that excitement, to get the kicks, man, to get the kicks. I wouldn't watch Nymphomaniac Volume 2 without watching the first one, because it'll make no sense. You won't have any context. But if you've seen the first one, you got to watch this one, because it's the end of the movie. It's like watching half a movie and then not finishing it. It puts things into perspective for the second half. But I think it might work better as a four-hour tome, but I don't know if you want to spend 4 hours watching this movie. Still, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is In the Blood. This is a smaller movie. It's released by Anchor Bay, and it's in limited release, so you're going to have to check your local listings. Gina Carano stars as a woman who has a checkered past, and her husband goes missing on their honeymoon. She gets no help from the police, so she has to take to the streets to find him herself.
I'm looking for my husband.
Is he here?
No, nadie, nada.
Boy, I understand you're the main beneficiary of all his assets.
I'm his wife, and I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get him back.
Whoa!
Whoa!
What happened to my husband?
Maybe you can torture people in America? But not here.
Everything you see is not really what it is.
What aren't you telling us? What really happened?
Hollywood has been trying to make a star out of Gina Carano for a couple of years. They started with Haywire, which is, she's good. I liked Haywire. Not a whole lot of people did. It kind of bombed. But I thought she was good. Part of it is her character is a very cold and standoffish and not very warm and cuddly. And that works, because here's the thing. Gina Carano is a fighter by trade. She is not an actor by trade. And she has a small talent for acting, and she's very attractive, so she looks good on screen, but she doesn't know how to react. She doesn't have the experience acting. She's still learning. She has sort of the awkwardness of like a junior high or high school production, where you're like, oh, this person, if they took some classes and got some experience, they might end up being pretty good. But right now, she just doesn't have it. She's too laid back. She almost appears smug in her happy moments. And I give her credit for really trying to, you know, throw some acting chops on for this. And they have these big emotional scenes where she has to break down and she has to cry and she has to deal with the fact that her husband's missing and she's not getting any help by anybody and she's feeling the world's against her. There's some pretty intense emotion that should be there, but it's really not, because it's Gina Carano acting. That's what you get when you take a fighter. I mean, the Rock. Take, for example, The Rock. I think The Rock now, who started out as a, you know, wrestler, The Rock can deliver some decent acting now, because he's been doing acting for years. But when he did The Scorpion King, don't ask him to have an Oscar moment. And this might be just a little too early for her. I think she needs to make the decision on whether she's going to go for a Hollywood career and then really try to make it work. Because her other films, like I said, Haywire, her character was sort of humdrum and quiet, and she was cold, and that worked for the role. And if you look at like her in Fast and Furious 6, she's just playing ultimately a glorified police officer who has a big kick butt action scene at one point. She like fights Michelle Rodriguez, and that's cool to see. But when it comes to acting, she barely has any dialogue in Fast and Furious 6, so that works. But they really throw a lot at her, and the movie's on her shoulders. I mean, when you got Kim Gagadé and Luis Guzman as your acting foils, the movie's on your shoulders. I mean, I love Luis Guzman. I mean, he's hilarious. You know, for those who watch Community, he's one of the greatest human beings that's ever walked the planet. But he's not an acting powerhouse, and he kind of acts circles around Carano. So she does fine. And once she actually gets to the butt kicking, she's actually pretty good. When she goes on the warpath, that's actually pretty awesome. In a way, it's sort of like Taken, where, you know, they just go hardcore and go after these people. And when she's like that, it works. The reason Taken works so much better is because Liam Neeson actually has a lot of acting experience and a lot of acting chops. And so when he has a chance to be emotional or really be upset, he conveys that instead of just, you know, giving a scowl on his face and beating somebody down. Overall, I still thought, for just sort of like a direct-to-video kind of thing, something that most people are going to watch on DVD or Blu-ray or on demand, it was okay. It's not mega motion picture quality, but it's good for a Saturday afternoon. So I'm actually going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, we got to go. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Alan Partridge, the movie.
Welcome
are back with Kevin Carr on Fat Guys at the Movies. We are moving into the big summer movie season. Are big, huge event movies coming earlier now? I remember when I was a kid, when the Star Wars movies, the original Star Wars movies were coming out, you know, like the early 80s, the big week they chose was always Memorial Day weekend. I think they opened on like the Wednesday before Memorial Day, so they can get that 5-day spread. And that was like the opening of summer. Movies that came out at the beginning of May didn't really matter. It was summer because that's when kids were going to the theaters and that sort of thing. Just a couple years ago, it suddenly became first weekend of May is opening weekend. And look at what happened. We had Avengers come out a couple years ago, and it made, short of Avatar, was the highest grossing movie ever. So that movie proved the fact that people go see movies in May. Well, now we're getting big, huge tentpole summer-style movies in April. I mean, case in point, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. I'm not complaining. I like them to spread the blockbusters around. I really don't want to have to just do blockbuster after blockbuster after blockbuster all through the summer. It's nice to have a little bit of a break. But it's just kind of crazy that I feel like we're in the summer movie season. It's still snowing occasionally outside. Anyways, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Steve Rogers, not Mr. Rogers, Steve Rogers works with Nick Fury and Black Widow to uncover corruption in S.H.I.E.L.D. while fighting a new super soldier assassin.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier. He's a ghost. You'll never find him.
Captain, to build a better world sometimes means tearing the old one down.
And that makes enemies.
How do we know the good guys from the bad guys? If they're shooting at you, they're bad.
I was never a huge fan of the first Captain America. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was good. It was an enjoyable summer movie. But of the pre-Avenger movies, it was my least favorite. And I also wasn't a huge fan of Iron Man. I mean, these are good movies. They fall on the kind of rock side, at least. But these were never movies that I loved. I loved The Incredible Hulk. Part of the reason I loved The Incredible Hulk is it wasn't an origin story. I am so tired of origin stories. I've read comic books my whole life. You see origins. And while every character is slightly different, and there are some characters that don't fit this mold, like Wonder Woman, for example, pretty much all superheroes have the same origin for the most part. There's somebody who's either a misfit of somehow or outside of the norm, either is given or born with superpowers that they have to use to save the world and fight evil, and then they have to deal with balancing their normal life with their superpowers. That's like every single, that's Batman, that's Superman, that's Spider-Man, that's the Fantastic Four. That's everybody. And whether or not they have a secret identity, they still have to work to balance that. I'm tired of origin stories because we see them so many times and I'm just like, get to the story, because the story is the same for everybody. You know, Captain America started out as a 98-pound weakling who got super soldier powers and we have to go through all that. And you're just like, just get to the story, get to the conflict. Because I've seen this kind of origin story over and over and over again. So I tend to like the sequels better. That's why I thought Thor to the Dark World was much better than Thor, the first one, for multiple reasons. And I liked this one better than the first Captain America. It jumps right into the story. And like I said, The Incredible Hulk, part of the reason I love The Incredible Hulk movie is it goes right into the story. It's not telling you how he became the Hulk. You go through that in the opening titles. It's kind of cool. Now, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, jumps right into the story, and it has him in modern day, so it's sort of dovetailing off of the Avengers, and this sort of cross-pollination is really becoming apparent in the Marvel movies. It's no longer just, you know, it's no longer just an Iron Man movie with a couple cameos. This involves S.H.I.E.L.D., and it involves the people from S.H.I.E.L.D. that really were developed in the Avengers, and in other movies, like even Black Widow, she showed up, she started off in Iron Man 2, and then she was developed in Avengers, and now she's in Captain America. She's just hopping from movie to movie to movie. If you can have Scarlett Johansson hop on you in this is a good thing. I'd support that. I'd also wouldn't turn that down. But anyways, this is a fun movie. It's a big budget, big screen movie. Has some great effects, very much like The Avengers and Thor the Dark World. It's a big screen movie. Go check it out on the big screen. See it in IMAX. It looks cool when it's big. The only thing that's a bit of a drawback is the directing style of the action can sometimes get very herky-jerky. You get that shaky cam. That's I felt sort of was a mid-2000s thing. and now we're in the teens, and we really shouldn't be doing the herky-jerky camera, unless you're doing found footage, and that stuff needs to end anyways. This is overdone in that respect. So I saw it in 2D, and I was pleased with it, but even then I thought that the action, when it gets intimate, it moves around a little too much. That's one of the things I loved about Avengers and some of the other ones, is they held the camera steady. They weren't trying to do the Bourne ultimatum. So Captain America, it's fun. He's a Boy Scout, but you can really get behind him. It's not a whole lot of depth to his character, but he works with everybody else, and you have this sort of web of characters where the development happens. And that's what makes the movie work. If it was just Steve Rogers running around with a shield, kind of would have been dull. But I think they utilized a lot of the characters. I'm not a huge Scarlett Johansson fan, but she was good in this. And Nick Fury had something to go on in here. And heck, even Robin from How I Met Your Mother showed up again, you know, because her TV show ended. What the heck's she going to do now? So yes, Captain America the Winter Soldier is a good movie. Go check it out. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Another movie I want to talk about. We got a load of movies this week. This is Alan Partridge, the movie. Now, if you're America, you've probably not heard of this. It's a character that Steve Coogan came up with, and he's played it on radio and television and award shows. He's been doing this for years, and he gets his own movie this time. Steve Coogan plays a buffoon radio personality, just like me, who becomes the unlikely hostage negotiator when a fellow DJ takes over the station with a shotgun.
Mid-Morning Matters with Alan Partridge. Music and chat for the Norfolk generation.
Alan, we're being taken over.
Pat, no one's getting sacked. Just sack Pat.
Just gave me 30 minutes to clear out my locker.
Oh.
Pat is willing to talk to us through you.
You are the face of this siege.
I am Siege Face.
So, you're with the police now?
Identify yourself! Identify yourself!
Alan Partridge! Who the... Alan Partridge! You know who I am.
This is British, and I preface that because it's very typical British humor. It's extremely dry. Not as dry as it could be. There's some stuff, there's even British humor that's just too dry for me. It's dry, but it also has these bursts of absurdity, which Steve Coogan is known for, that are brilliant. Now, if you've just seen Steve Coogan in Philomena, because you took your silver-haired old mother to go see that over award season, it's not Steve Coogan from Philomena. It's more Steve Coogan playing Jesus in Hamlet 2. This guy's a moron. He's the kind of guy you want to punch in the face. In a good way. This is very funny. Steve Coogan really kind of commands, and you don't have to know a lot about Alan Partridge to get the story. You just have had to have heard buffoons talking on the radio enough. And I'm assuming if you're listening to me, you are fully aware of what a buffoon sounds like on the radio. It has a pretty good supporting cast. It has Cole Meany, who's getting a little bit heavy, but he plays the bad guy. He plays the guy taking the radio station hostage. And it's, even though it's got a movie cinematic feel to it, because it's got the SWAT team and it's got the hostage negotiation, and it's got the danger that's associated with it, and it's filmed so it looks good, as opposed to the stuff that, you know, they produce for BBC, which, you know, is oftentimes lower production quality. This actually looks like a movie. It has a cinematic feel to it, but it also is very intimate and self-contained, and it all takes place in North Norfolk, England. And you can imagine that this is big news there, and nobody outside of the city cared that any of this happened. And that's kind of what is the charm of Alan Partridge, because he's such an idiot and he thinks he's top of the world, but he's top of the world of the north end of a relatively small seaside city in England. And that's as far as his stretch goes. So if you can enjoy that buffoonery and shenanigans, you can enjoy this movie. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I showed it to my kids. It's got some swearing. You gotta choose your battles. So it's R-rated, but I showed it to my kids. They love British humor, and we had a blast watching it. It's definitely worth checking out. It's in limited release. It's also on demand right now from Magnolia Pictures. Alan Partridge, the movie, or as they call it in Europe, Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Anyways, we have to go to a break. We're going to do one little quick movie review when we get back, and then box office, movie news, and the worldwide famous, universe famous DVD roundup. We'll be right back. are back, leading you on out the door with Fat Guys at the Movies in our final segment. And then you guys can, you know, say sayonara and head on out. This buffoon is almost done talking on the radio. Let's talk about Madagascar, Island of Lemurs. This is a smaller release. Now, I didn't actually get a chance to see it because I live in Columbus, Ohio, and it's not opening here. And I didn't get a chance to drive to Cleveland to go see a 40-minute movie. Sue me. Madagascar, Island of Lemurs. Learn more about lemurs and their conservation in this IMAX nature documentary.
The Lemurs of Madagascar. These ultimate survivors are now in danger. But a team of scientists are working to save our oldest living relatives. And the only place on Earth they call home.
I've always enjoyed these things. They're 40-minute movies. These are what IMAX stuff used to be before they started releasing major motion pictures, like Captain America. We have two IMAX screens in Columbus. They're not showing this movie. Why? Because they're saving it for Captain America. Now, I think it was at a science center in Cleveland. So you got to check your local listings. The IMAX movies, you're no longer going to be seeing them in the big movie houses. You're going to have to go to the specialty, like science museums or NASA museum or something like that, to see some of these documentaries. But these are really good. It's done by Warner Brothers, and they've done stuff before. They did The Born to Be Wild. That's the one with the orangutan and the elephants. Under the Sea was one that's an ocean documentary. These are just basic nature films, and they're shot on IMAX 70mm cameras. So they have incredible resolution, and they're really cool to watch. And they're G-rated, so they're something for the kids that you can take to. And that's what's nice about them being 40 minutes long. So if you take a young kid to it and they get bored about an hour into the movie, it'll be done by the time they get bored. It's also narrated by Morgan Freeman. So you know that it's got to be a respectable film because Morgan Freeman, he played God. I did not get a chance to see this, but I do suggest if it is playing locally or anywhere near you, take a chance. It's a nice little trip. It's a little expensive for an IMAX movie, but it's the only way you're going to see it as high resolution as you can. And if you've never seen an IMAX, a true IMAX movie, get a chance to see this. These things look beautiful. All right, let's move on to box office. We know what I said last week? I said Divergent was going to win with $25 million. I was close. I was actually very close. It made $25.6 million in its second week, which is okay. Now, it had a lower drop-off. It dropped like over 50%, but it was less of a drop-off than something like Hunger Games. But the problem with Hunger Games is Hunger Games made 150-some million its first weekend, and like 20 million of that was its first night even, not even the first day. So it was front-loaded, but it was front-loaded because of all the midnight shows. Divergent made like 4 million, and it made like 10% of its final take or less in that first night. So, you know, you expect it to have a lower drop, but still, it's going to crack 100 million, but it's not going to be 150 million, much more than that. And it all depends on what it does overseas. We'll see what happens. It's sort of the jury still out with Divergent. But the big winner this week was Noah. It made almost 44 million, which is kind of amazing considering how just botched the marketing campaign was for this and how Paramount avoided any sort of press that they could. As much as they could, they held press from it, which is odd because the movie was getting really good ratings with Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic. The cinema score was not very good. That's what they ask. They poll people leaving the movie, and it got like a C, which is not very good at all. In fact, Sabotage, which came in an embarrassing seventh with about $5 million, had a better cinema score than Noah. I think mainly because the people going to see Sabotage knew what they were getting into. Noah was a kind of an open-ended thing. Noah was an interesting movie, and this is definitely a win for Darren Aronofsky and for Paramount. It's going to drop quickly because of that low cinema score, and you've got, you know, the big screen spectacle of Captain America coming. But still, that's a good number, and it's doing extremely well overseas. So the rest of the things sort of laid out the way you'd expect them to. Same orders last week. Cesar Chavez, which we didn't cover because it wasn't screened, and I don't even think they didn't even know how much they were going to open it, you know, early in the week. It came in at 12th with $2.9 million, which isn't bad. Anyways, this week, I think that Captain America is going to win. I'm going out on a limb on that one. I really don't think In the Blood's going to come out and, you know, take over. Nor is Island of the Lemurs going to beat Captain America. I think it's going to make about $85 million. It's been doing extremely well overseas. It's been open for a week already, a week or two in Europe. You know, for a movie called Captain America to do well in Europe, that's actually a feat on its own. You know, so there's no bad blood there. But I think it's going to do very well. $85 million. I think it's actually going to do better than the previous film, because the previous film wasn't a huge moneymaker. I think it's going to be along the lines of what Thor 2 made, which is good. That's good enough to cover the budget and get you to the next Avengers movie. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's catch up on a couple news items real quick. Fast and Furious 7 resumed filming, which is good. They finally figured out what they're doing with Paul Walker's scenes, and they're using a body double and digital trickery, which is good, because they need to finish that, and they need to put that story to bed and move on. And also with Vin Diesel news, they're going to be doing a fourth Riddick movie. At least that's the talk. And I think that's great, because even though I don't think the Riddick movies are very good, I think it's great that he can do them on the cheap for his fans, and they do well. More power to you, Riddick. I mean, Vin Diesel, whatever your name is. The bald guy with pecs as big as mine. Next, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, that Harry Potter spinoff. They're now making three movies out of that. I would love to see what happens with this one. I'm very curious, because Harry Potter was a phenomenon. A whole bunch of people read the book. I don't know anybody who's read that famous Beast book. I don't even know if my wife's read it. She's a huge Harry Potter fan. And it also might be a little bit too late, because the last Harry Potter movie came out in what, 2011, 2012? And by the time this thing's made, you're going to have like a 4 or 5 year absence. It's like trying to make a sixth Twilight movie, you know, in 2020. It just won't work. And then finally, Tony Kebbell is Dr. Doom. We've got a Dr. Doom for the new Fantastic Four movie. This guy was in Prince of Persia. You know, he's been in a bunch of things. So I don't know. I'm not terribly familiar with his work. He's going to be wearing a mask. So what do we care? It's Dr. Doom. He's going to be in a mask. We got to move on. That sound means we're going to the DVD roundup. Spotlight this week, I want to spotlight the Chucky collection. This came out last October, and it's a really neat collection. I don't know if I talked enough about it when it did come out. It's got the complete Child's Play series, you know, 1 through 3, and then they had like Bridek Chucky and Seed of Chucky and the new Curse of Chucky. This is a fun collection, and if you're going to bother to get that Curse of Chucky, why not buy the full set? Because you got the whole thing. And while some of the Blu-rays are the stripped-down bare-bones version that you got when they originally released, they're all Blu-rays. And you can enjoy it. And it's kind of fun to binge watch the Chucky movies, because they go completely bonkers after a certain amount of time. They go from being an actual genuinely scary movie to becoming redonkulous. And they're all tied together too. The spotlight is over. Let's talk about the movies that are now in the spotlight. We've got Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues. You can get the original and the like 587,000 new joke cut. There's 47 Ronin, which came out in 3D. You can get it on 3D Blu-ray. Looks pretty cool on 3D. I didn't see it in the theaters in 3D. I saw it in 2D. I warmed up to this a little bit better as a home viewing, because it's essentially a samurai movie starring a bunch of people that most Americans aren't going to recognize. They throw in Keanu Reeves. He kind of gets in the way of the story because he's not a samurai. And guess what? He's also not Japanese. But they needed a star to spend $150 million on, and so that's what they got. So anyways, that's out. And, I mean, it's worth checking out. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's not awful. It just sort of got lost in the Christmas shuffle. There's also The Pirate Fairy, which has nothing to do with Keanu Reeves. This is the latest Disney Tinkerbell movie, which these are cute enough. And if you got little girls, they're going to love these movies. What's interesting about this one, it gives a little bit of tie-in with Captain Hook, played by Loki himself, Tom Hiddleston. Psych Season 8, far superior of a finale to the awful How I Met Your Mother finale, has some really cool special features. That is the bonuses on the musical, and they have a Suck It montage. What's neat about the final season is they had a chance to really go outside of the box. All the characters get their own story, and they have like a film noir version of one, and they've got a horror movie version of one. It's really cool. They do some neat stuff. Sad to see Psych go, but it went out in the right way. Really good 1-2 punch of absolute redonkulous cheese is King Kong vs. Godzilla and King Kong Escape, available on Universal Blu-ray. This is one of those riff track your own show kind of thing. These are ridiculous movies, but fun to watch. And then The Little Rascals Save the Day, which is pretty terrible, but, you know, hey, it's a kid's movie, direct to video. What else would you expect? It's just kind of weird to see kids in modern day walking around looking like hobos and tramps and racist versions from the Depression. The stinker of the week is The Bag Man, starring John Cusack and Robert De Niro. How the heck did they get in this? They're good actors with a lot of credibility. Somebody owes somebody money. That's it. I'm out of time. We got to go. Next week, we're going to be talking about Draft Day, Go Browns, Oculus, Rio 2, Don Hemingway, and Under the Skin with a naked Scarlett Johansson. They're naked Scarlett Johansson in the movie. She's not going to be naked in the magical studio in the sky. Maybe she is. I don't know. I'll give her a call. We'll see. But until then, have a fat time at the movies.